And it's time for the Earth First Update. All the environmental news you can use. Let's start off with an announcement. This Saturday, December 18th at 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. The California Native Plant Society, Santa Cruz County Chapter Habitat Restoration Team Saturday Restoration is going to take place this Saturday at Quail Hollow Ranch County Park. Chuck Bowman and Lee Summers will be leading this Saturday's project while I participate in the annual Christmas Bird Count. Linda is writing this. We had a fantastic volunteer turnout last meeting time and hope to get more of the same. We will be working on our ongoing eradication efforts of invasive non-native French broom with recent rains, and it will probably be raining on Saturday. It will be excellent soil conditions for broom pulling. In the new year, we will continue to tackle this infestation in hopes of not adding more to the seed bank. And French broom seed bank lasts for many years. And she says, wishing you all solstice greetings and see you next year. If you want to get to Quail Hollow Ranch County Park, go up Graham Hill Road out of Santa Cruz. When you get down into Felton, turn right on East Ziani Road. That's the first light you come to. Go up 2 miles, turn left on Quail Hollow Road, the park entrance on the right, about half a mile. Meet in the gravel parking lot on the left side of the entrance road. The Habitat Restoration Team is a volunteer group working to restore native habitat in the parks and protected lands of Santa Cruz County. And they welcome you to go up there and lend a hand. They provide tools. You bring gloves and some water. Once again, that's 10 a.m. this Saturday at Quail Hollow Ranch County Park. And they say if it gets really rainy that they'll call it a day. But I've known these people to work in a rain. So, and actually, it's a good thing. If you want more information, contact their program leader, Linda. Her number, 831-462-4041, or contact her email at redwoodrn.packbell.net. That's REDWDRN at packbell.net, or visit their website, www.cruisecnps.org. And here we go. It's whaling season in the Antarctic oceans, and here's what it means. New Zealand warns of dangerous Antarctic whaling season, and this story by the Associated Press. New Zealand warned Wednesday that the mood between Japanese whalers and protesters who challenge them annually off of Antarctica is especially volatile this year, and urged both sides to show restraint to ensure no one is killed. The whalers left Japan earlier this month for the Antarctic Ocean, and the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society boats have left New Zealand in pursuit. And we will have the Sea Shepherd commentary in a moment. Each year, protesters try to harass the whaling fleet into stopping a hunt that Japan says is part of a scientific program that allows an exemption from an international moratorium on commercial killing of the animals. Protesters say there is no reason to kill the animals to research them, and that the program amounts to commercial whaling in disguise because the surplus meat of the killed whales is sold in Japan and other places, I might add. Clashes between the sides often take place, and last January, a Sea Shepherd boat was sunk after its bow was sheared off in a collision with a whaling ship. Each hunting season runs from about December through February, and a recent adjudication said that both captains were at fault in that collision last year. New Zealand Foreign Minister Murray McCulley said on Wednesday, appealing to both sides to adhere to the law of the sea and show proper regard for the safety of other human beings. Here you have a pretty explosive cocktail. You've got Japanese whalers going down there feeling somewhat angry about the developments last year. You've got protesters going down there that say they're going to take a very robust approach, he said. McCulley said, armed Japanese Coast Guard personnel are going to be on the Japanese whaling ship this year for the first time in 3 years. Anyone who looks at what happened last year has got to be fearful there will be a loss of human life under these circumstances, McCulley told reporters. His comments came with a day after Sea Shepherd's protest vessel, Steve Irwin, sailed from the New Zealand capital, Wellington, to join the group's other two protest boats in searching for the whaling fleet. Last month, the Japanese Fisheries Ministry confirmed that armed Coast Guard officers would travel on the whaling ships for the first time in 3 years in response to an activist boarding of a whaler last February. Strict gun control laws and Japan's pacifist constitution mean the use of weapons is strictly limited to self-defense. Coast Guard officers can make arrests, however, if someone boards one of the boats. Also Wednesday, McCulley announced that New Zealand would not join Australia's legal bid at the International Court of Justice to stop Japan's whale hunt. The two countries have led international condemnation of Japan's hunt, calling it an obvious front for commercial whaling, and New Zealand had previously said it may join the Australian action. Instead, New Zealand will pursue diplomatic talks aimed at persuading Japan to end the whaling at the earliest possible time, McCulley said, adding that the court might require parties in the case to freeze diplomatic efforts. New Zealand would seek permission to intervene in the case, meaning it could make representations to the court without formally being a party to the suit. Australia announced in May it would start legal action in the International Court of Justice in The Hague, arguing the Japanese whale hunt is in contravention of international convention obligations. Australian Foreign Minister Kevin Rudd said New Zealand's decision not to join the case and press on with diplomatic efforts was what Australia wanted. Japanese officials have not released any detail on the size or targets of the whaler's hunt this season. They seek to kill 950 of the mammals each year in the Antarctic seas. Excuse me. Let's try a little ale here. See if that cures what ails me. And here is, of course, the Sea Shepherd Society editorial opinion. Taking three fair ships into harm's way. Commentary by Captain Paul Watson of the Sea Shepherd Society. We have received information from a journalist in Japan that the policy for the Japanese whaling fleet for this season will be to not run from us, but to attempt to kill whales in the presence of Sea Shepherd ships and crew. With all due respect, I would strongly advise the Japanese crew members to be very careful in implementing such a strategy. We, that is the Sea Shepherd Society, view the killing of whales in the Southern Ocean as murder, and I can promise them, and 3 decades of our history will attest to this, that we will defend these whales with our lives. I will not abide with a whale being killed in our presence. 2 years ago, the whale that was killed and featured on Whale Wars was slain 12 miles from my ship and filmed by our helicopter. I would, without hesitation, place my ship in harm's way to save the life of a whale. We cannot be expected to sit idle while a child is being molested, a woman is being raped, or a person is being murdered. What kind of a person would simply stand by and hang banners or take pictures while a puppy or kitten is being stomped or kicked to death? We will not do so in the presence of a clear intent to murder a whale by these despicable poachers from Japan. On July 7, 1961, President John F. Kennedy addressed the graduating class of the United States Naval Academy at Annapolis. In his speech, he made reference to a quote from Captain John Paul Jones, who reportedly said, quote, "Give me a fair ship so that I might go into harm's way," unquote. But Kennedy misquoted Jones, who actually said, quote, "I wish to have no connection with any ship that does not sail fast, for I intend to go in harm's way," unquote. Either way, these quotes work for Sea Shepherd. We have 3 fair ships, the Steve Irwin, the Bob Barker, and the Gojira, and we intend to sail them into harm's way. Our primary strategy is to block access to the factory ship, the Nishin Maru, to prevent whales from being loaded. This involves keeping either the Bob Barker or the Steve Irwin in a position not to allow the transfer of a whale from one of the killing vessels. Whalers tried to challenge us on this tactic 2 years ago. They had previous experience with Greenpeace attempting to do just this, and they found that when they moved in aggressively, Greenpeace backed off to avoid a collision. They were quite shocked to discover that Sea Shepherd would not back off. Their attempts resulted in 3 separate collisions until the whalers backed off instead of us, and they did not attempt to unload whales in our presence again. This season, if they try to muscle their way into position to transfer dead whales, they will find that Sea Shepherd will become even more persistent. If they attempt to do so, they will cause collisions. Sea Shepherd fully expects the Japanese whalers to be more hostile, aggressive, and angry because they are more frustrated than ever. We have cost them their kills and their profits for the last 5 years. They have also been given the green light to act more violently in light of the fact that no one even questioned the Japanese captain who cut the 80 Gill in two and nearly killed six of her crew. That was the collision last year. My crew has all been asked a very direct question. Are you ready to risk your life to save a whale? Only those who have stated that they would have been selected for the Operation No Compromise campaign. 88 men and women from 21 nations represent that commitment in these southern waters this year. Maybe the Japanese will refer to them as the Crazy 88, but the fact remains that each and every one of them represents millions of people who detest the whaling. Their stories will be broadcast to millions of people through Whale Wars, and their efforts will be written about in magazines, newspapers, and books. If one of us should die at the hands of a Japanese whaler, the entire nation of Japan will be shamed and the Japanese government vilified. The government of Japan needs to make a decision. Are they ready to allow their mad dog whalers to injure or kill themselves or us to defend their illegal, lethal, and universally unpopular activities in the Southern Ocean? Are they ready to risk the lives of their own citizens by allowing them to engage deliberately in high seas collisions in the most hostile, remote, and unforgiving seas in the world? Are they ready to see people die to defend their cruel, archaic, unprofitable, and pathetically craven illegal industry? Sea Shepherd will not initiate a collision, but our ships will hold station to block the unloading of dead whales up the slipway to the flensing deck of the Nishin Maru. We will hold station no matter how much the killing boats attempt to batter our hulls with their collisions. Australia, New Zealand, or both should dispatch a naval vessel to the Southern Ocean to maintain the peace, observe the situation, and be prepared to mediate and rescue crew if required. Both nations, along with the United States and the Netherlands, are calling for restraint, but what does that mean exactly? Do they expect the Japanese to refrain from killing whales? Do they expect Sea Shepherd to refrain from protecting whales? Where do they expect this restraint, and how do they envision such restraint being exercised? The Aussies and Kiwis will not be sending their naval presence, but the Japanese government has taken action to place military personnel on the whaling ships, like they own the Southern Ocean territory, in which in practice, for all intents and purposes, they do. What Australia and New Zealand should be doing is exercising their sovereignty over the Australian Antarctic Territory and the Ross Dependency. Their position is simply cowardly. In the name of appeasing corporate trade interests, they see their primary responsibility as hawking wood chips, coal, uranium, and other commodities to Japan, instead of acting in the interests of the whales within their own territories and their own people, who wish to see real action on the part of their governments to protect the whales. On November 17th, New Zealand issued a special limited edition set of Ross Sea Dependency stamps commemorating five whale species, minke, sei, sperm, humpback, and orca. New Zealand claims the Southern Ocean region of the Ross Sea as its own. They claim the whales as their own. The question remains, why do they allow themselves to be bullied by the ruthless, plundering whalers from Japan? And that's the response by Captain Paul Watson of the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society. And you can check out seashepherd.org for more information. Here's the update from the Buffalo Field Campaign. Update from the field: rifle shots crack the crisp, cold winter air. The sharp sounds echo the mournful deaths of 12 more wild buffalo. 22 wild buffalo have now been killed in the hunt. Every day, volunteers venture out into the frozen fields and mountains from sunup to sundown, monitoring the buffalo's migration, keeping watchful eyes on those in danger. The Buffalo Field Campaign is currently running full-time camps in both West Yellowstone and Gardner. We have two ongoing lawsuits to protect the bison, and we are working with members of Congress to end the senseless harassment and slaughter of America's only continuously wild bison population. These efforts are very costly, and we cannot succeed without your help. So please donate today to the Buffalo Field Campaign and keep us strong in the field and on all levels of the policy front. It is hard to bear witness to the hunt, more difficult to gather the necessary courage and rise above our pain as we convey the trouble the buffalo are in and attempt to build alliances with those who are hunting them. It is a bittersweet and heart-heavy journey to at once celebrate the migration of this ancient animal we are so awestruck by and blessed to live with, yet fearful for them in their coming, knowing that a few short steps in a certain direction over imaginary lines that they know nothing about will probably lead to their imminent harassment or demise. In the Gardner Basin, along Yellowstone's northern boundary, wild buffalo have again been forced off their winter range by Yellowstone National Park and Montana Department of Livestock. Wild buffalo are not park animals. Belonging to or in Yellowstone, they belong to themselves and to the land that they roam. Foolishly, millions of our tax dollars are wasted every year in efforts to appease livestock interests and prevent wild buffalo from accessing available habitat and restoring themselves to their native homelands. Buffalo are an integral part of the landscape. The restoration is needed to heal the land. The habitat is there. The buffalo only need to be able to access it. Your voice can help clear the way. Please contact your members of Congress and also President Obama on behalf of America's last wild buffalo. And you better do it real quick because they're about all to go home for Christmas. If you want more information about the Buffalo Field Campaign, please visit their website at www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. If you want to make a donation, and on the website it has a number of things you can donate in addition to money, you should send it to the Buffalo Field Campaign, P.O. Box 957, West Yellowstone, Montana, the zip 59758. That address again, Buffalo Field Campaign, P.O. Box 957, West Yellowstone, Montana, 59758. And do remember that the Buffalo Field Campaign is the only group working in the field every day in defense of the last wild buffalo in the United States. And there's been a roadless win, and your continued support helps. Over 900,000 acres of roadless land was protected today in Southern California, after the California Wilderness Coalition and other conservation groups, off-road vehicle enthusiasts, and the California State Resources Agency, California Attorney General Jerry Brown, and the U.S. Forest Service completed a long-awaited settlement agreement that ended litigation against the U.S. Forest Service regarding the future of four Southern California national forests, the Los Padres, the Angeles, the San Bernardino, and the Cleveland. In 2009, a federal district court agreed with the California Wilderness Coalition, attorneys for the state of California and their partners, that the U.S. Forest Service had violated the National Environmental Protection Act when they wrote the latest version of the management plans for those forests. The issue, the California Wilderness Coalition argued, was that the management plans authorized potential road building and development of 900,000 roadless acres, and that the U.S. Forest Service had not properly assessed the cumulative damage that such projects would cause. Today's agreement is truly a coalition effort. Federal and state agencies and conservation groups like the California Wilderness Coalition will continue to work together to protect these roadless areas. The U.S. Forest Service has agreed to rewrite portions of the four forest plans that deal with roadless areas to consider protecting the roadless areas for long terms and to identify roads and trails that are damaging or threatening the integrity of adjacent roadless areas and to close or restore those routes. They also agreed to protect all existing roadless areas from development while they are rewriting the forest plans so that these places are not prevented from being recommended as wilderness in the future. If the revised plans still violate NEPA, the California Wilderness Coalition and its partners can bring the agency to court once more. With welcome winds of victory at our backs, we realize there is much more work to do. We will not rest until these areas and other roadless areas across California are permanently protected as wilderness. If you want more information, visit the California Wilderness Coalition website, www.calwild.org. That's calwild.org. And the Science Review has raised doubts about Spotted Owl Plan, as the public comment period for on the administration's latest draft Northern Spotted Owl Recovery Plan closed. Peer reviews by three scientific societies reveal substantial flaws in the plan. A key concern of the reviewers is that the plan calls for extensive logging of owl habitat to reduce fire risks, a course not backed by science and one that may harm spotted owls and reduce their likelihood of recovery. The plan for the threatened owl species was being rewritten to address previous criticisms that it ignored the existing science and an inspector general investigation that found the original plan had been undermined by political interference. The release of this revised owl plan is the first good opportunity for the administration to show they were serious about following the best available science, said Steve Holmer, senior policy advisor for American Bird Conservancy. It was an opportunity missed. The administration needs to take a hard look at the peer reviews and scale back their plans to log owl habitat. This is a real disappointment with potentially disastrous consequences for owl recovery unless the plan is overhauled. Following extensive criticism of how science is misused during the last administration, this administration has promised a renewed commitment to the government's use of sound science and issued the Presidential Memorandum of Scientific Integrity in 2009. In 2010, responding to internal investigations that found that political interference had previously undermined the use of best available science at the Department of Interior, Secretary Ken Salazar issued a similar science directive, Secretarial Order 3305, in September of this year. Peer reviews by the Wildlife Society, the Society for Conservation Biology, and the American Ornithologists Union concluded that the current draft is incomplete because the design for the owl reserves was not included in the draft and therefore could not determine whether the amount of habitat being conserved was sufficient. The reviews also found that there were significant shortcomings regarding maintenance of reserves in dry forest types and fire management. Recent peer-reviewed studies were not included in the draft, while non-peer-reviewed material was heavily relied upon to justify the plan's management direction. For example, the Wildlife Society review states, quote, "The service's strategy for no reserves in dry forests on the Eastern Cascades is exacerbated by the proposals for aggressive management of those dry forests because the treatments will reduce the amount of closed canopy forests in the landscape and reduce the amount and suitability of habitat for the subspecies. These proposals are not based on a complete review of the available science and they rely on unpublished reports." 20 organizations, including the American Bird Conservancy, the Cornell Lab of Ornithology, and partner organizations in the Bird Conservation Alliance, signed a December 15th comment letter to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service raising these concerns and recommending changes to ensure owl recovery. A key phrase in the letter states, quote, "A number of deficiencies identified in peer reviews by the scientific societies that reviewed the original plan have yet to be adequately addressed in the areas of active management and fire. Of particular concern are recommendations for extensive thinning treatments without empirical studies on the effects of these treatments on spotted owls and their prey. Further, estimates of owl habitat loss from fire are not based on defensible data sources, and we are concerned that the service has not adequately addressed post-fire logging, which may be an even greater threat to owls than fire," unquote. And if you want more information about this or anything the American Bird Conservancy is doing, go to www.abcbirds.org. And in a story which results in preemptive arrest, activists are found guilty at Ratcliffe Coal Climate Trial. 20 climate activists who planned, but they didn't do it, they just planned to shut down one of Britain's most polluting power stations for a week, were found guilty of conspiracy to commit aggravated trespass today. The activists were among 114 people arrested in a dawn raid on Easter Monday last year in a widely criticized policing operation that saw officers smashing their way into a school in Nottingham, England. It was the biggest preemptive arrest in British history. 20 of those arrested faced a Crown Court trial which opened last month and ended today. The activists openly accepted that they wanted to force plant owners E.ON to safely shut down the power station for a week in effort to stop 150,000 tons of CO2 from entering the atmosphere, but they said they weren't guilty of a crime because they were acting out of necessity due to the lack of an adequate response to climate change by corporations and politicians. This comes as the 16th UN climate change talks end in Cancun, where once again governments have failed to build a legally binding strategy to cut emissions. Speaking after the verdict, one of the defendants, Claire Whitney, said, "During this trial, we have heard from people on the front line of our changing climate and from a company that is still burning the most dirty form of fossil fuel for their economic benefit. These worlds are not compatible. Taking action is not an issue of moral righteousness, but an act of self-defense. If we're to stand a chance of avoiding irreversible climate damage, we've got to realize that to bring about a better world, we'll need to do it ourselves," unquote. Defendant Chris Kitchen said, quote, "We are in solidarity with all of those around the world fighting for climate and social justice. Together, we need to stop the root causes of climate change. We need to stop profit being put before people. It's big business and their paid politicians that are the real criminals, and we will not stand by as we are robbed of our future," unquote. Don Glass, another defendant in the case, said, quote, "This ruling won't stop emissions, but the huge support we have received from the people of Nottingham and internationally does demonstrate that public opinion is increasingly turning against the liberties that governments are taking with our future," unquote. The court had earlier heard that a team of protesters would have pressed the emergency stop buttons on the coal conveyors which feed the boilers, while another team would have climbed the inside of the chimney before abseiling into the flues to prevent the plant reopening for a week, saving 150,000 tons of CO2. Six defendants took to the witness stand. One, Ben Stewart, told the jury, "We did this to save human lives. I can't tell you if the lives we would have saved would have been my relatives or your relatives, but they would have been somebody's relatives," unquote. All defendants spoke of the huge amount of community engagement they have carried out to raise the issue of action on climate change while still seeing emissions continuing to rise unabated. The defendants also called a number of internationally renowned expert witnesses. They included Professor James Hansen, acclaimed as the world's leading climate scientist. He told the jury, quote, "It doesn't surprise me that young people are angry when they know that politicians are lying to them," unquote. When challenged by the judge as to the measurable effects of the defendant's proposed action, Hansen noted that the action would have prevented one, if not more, species from becoming extinct. Ian Roberts, professor of epidemiology at the London School of Hygiene and Medicine, detailed to the court the real and imminent threat to health posed by climate change, saying, "We risk a generational genocide as we sleepwalk into the nightmare." Dr. Roberts told the court that at least 150,000 people a year are dying as a result of man-made climate change. Former local member of Parliament Alan Simpson also appeared as a witness for the defense. In his written testimony, he said, quote, "Climate change protesters are, in my view, absolutely right to argue that we cannot continue with a business-as-usual approach to the United Kingdom's carbon emissions without threatening the very prospects of existence for future generations," unquote. Green Party leader Carolyn Lucas, member of Parliament, told the court politicians had failed in their duty to protect the public from climate change. And Russia rules that a disputed road can go ahead despite protests. In this story by Alexei Anishchuk, with editing by Tim Pierce, and appearing in Thomson Reuters. Russia has decided to restart work on a disputed motorway cutting through one of the last forests in Moscow's sprawling suburbs, overruling protests that prompted President Dmitry Medvedev to delay the project. Medvedev's order in August to suspend construction in the Khimki Forest was seen as a rare Kremlin concession to protesters and raised the hopes of environmentalists and other activists. The decision to go ahead announced on Tuesday will disappoint them and could deal a blow to the image of the president, who had championed the idea of giving activists and ordinary Russians a stronger voice in a nation known for top-down rule. Medvedev's original decision to halt construction was a rare moment of discord with his predecessor, Prime Minister Vladimir Putin. His subsequent reversal has given credence to suspicions that Putin is behind the approval of the project. Kremlin spokeswoman Natalia Tomakova told reporters on Tuesday that after reviewing possible alternatives, the government had told Medvedev it had decided in favor of the original route through the forest in Moscow's northern suburbs. The decision will be fulfilled, she added. Despite Deputy Prime Minister Sergei Ivanov announcing the plan will go ahead earlier in the day, said the government would spend up to 4 billion rubles, about $130 million, making good some of the ecological damage to the forest. "This is such a high-profile affair that additional ecological measures will be taken. Additional saplings will be planted and roadside infrastructure will be banned along an 8-kilometer section through the forest," Ivanov was quoted by Russian news agencies as saying. Evgenia Chirikova, an environmental activist who has led the fight against the motorway, said resuming the controversial project would be a judgment on Medvedev's indifference to the people, the law, and corruption. We need to hear the decision from the president's mouth. He must look the people in the eye and announce whether he accepts it, she told Reuters by telephone. Chudakova said that public discussion about how best to proceed with the work was to have been part of the government review, but activists have been ignored or sidelined. Medvedev promised us public discussions. There were none. He promised to listen to public experts. Let's hear them, she said. Chudakova and other campaigners have organized months of protests this year in the Khimki suburbs, culminating in a central Moscow rally attended by several thousand people, led by veteran rock star Yuri Shevchuk. Police have often broken up such protests roughly, and journalists who wrote about alleged corruption connected with the motorway's construction have been beaten severely. One local reporter who has become a symbol of the intensity of the struggle over the motorway, Mikhail Beketov, was beaten savagely in 2008, an attack that left him brain damaged and in a wheelchair after losing four fingers and part of his lower leg. Beketov's supporters said he made enemies while campaigning against the motorway. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for the Earth First update for this week. I want to urge you to tune in next week for another edition of the Earth First update here on Free Radio Santa Cruz. The Earth First Update is a production of Earth First Radio and is produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. We want to thank you for listening. If you would like to download or listen to a podcast of this Earth First Update or previous ones, you can go to the following website, www.h2opodcast.com. That's h2opodcast.com. And when you get there, click on Earth and then select Earth First Radio. And we want to thank the folks at h2opodcast.com for recording and archiving those shows. And come on back next week, and we'll have another Earth First update for you.